RadioInfluence.com. This is Landry Football on Radio Influence, the only podcast where you can get perspective of what happened on the gridiron through the eyes of a coach, scout, and front office administrator. Now, it's time to step into the film room. Here's Chris Landry.
Well, and it is Thursday, October 18th. And this is another edition of the Landry Football Podcast, coming to you every Tuesday and Thursday here at LandryFootball.com and wherever you listen to this podcast, produced by our great folks, friends at Radio Influence. Got a lot to get to today. Lots of games that we're going to preview. We've got some really good questions. We're going to get to those as well. Reminder that if you got a question about anything going on in the world of college football, around the NFL, anything related to football, players, teams, coaches, schemes, hit us up at LandryFootball.com. Just hit contact Chris and I will address it right here on this podcast. So got a good friend that we've added to the show. We're going to get to that, talk to you a little bit about what they have to offer that I think is going to be a real positive impact to you guys out there. We're going to talk to that in a little bit. Want to remind you about LandryFootball.com. If you've not yet joined us, folks, we've gotten up. We're right approaching 80 major college football programs that are members that are hearing about us, all 32 NFL teams. And we want you to become a member for our fan portion of this, to get in on all the latest inside information around the college and NFL scene, giving you the perspective that teams hire us for, hire me for, as a coaching and a scouting consultant, we can provide to you as a fan. And for less than a magazine subscription, no, you're thinking, oh, man, that's too expensive, too involved for me. Oh, no, it's not. I guarantee you, if you're going around wasting your time on the web trying to find different blogs from people that are just Joe fan or just really don't have any background in football, it's your choice. You do what you want, but you can get professional information from somebody that's a trained professional, as a coach and a scout for years, breaking down the game from inside the film room, recruiting, college football, the draft, NFL, coaching searches, which I'm unfortunately this time of year you have to get involved in, and a lot of that's going to start to happen over the next month or so. So check out LandryFootball.com today. It's our best membership package ever that we've offered. You try us out for a month, 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, a year is our best rate. But you can get insights from a coaching and veteran coaching scouting perspective. And just tell us that you heard us here. We're continuing to help the hurricane damage victims on the Atlantic seaboard, the Carolinas, Georgia, and Florida, and buying supplies. And also, I want to remind you, too, if you have a business that you want us to help you build and brand for you, contact me at LandryFootball.com, and we'll absolutely take care of that for you. Okay, we want to get into some of the games of the weekend, some of the importances of how things are at least playing out. And because we're in week 8 of college football, we're going to kind of talk about some of the surprises and disappointments to this point in the season, which will lead to some of the conversations that we're having about who may be in trouble and the difficulty of the season and what does it mean, how do they fix it, who's been really impressive, but still a lot of football left. I want to do it now because I think people get excited about where their team is or disappointed where their team is, and very often within 2-3 weeks those fortunes of both are going to change. So we're going to get into that. Want to tonight, Stanford and Arizona State are on in college football. Also, Georgia State and Arkansas State. And in the NFL, the Cardinals and the Broncos. From a college football standpoint tonight, Stanford is maybe one of those teams that people will label as a disappointment. And I guess if you feel like, because of Stanford's pedigree, that they are a national player and should make the playoffs every year, you would consider them a disappointment. But I don't know that they were any better than what their record is to this point. In my view, when I look at them, I see a team that's about what I expected. For those that thought they were going to win the Pac-12, yeah, it's a disappointment. 4-2 is not that big of a disappointment. Neither has Washington been the disappointment at 5-2. They're good teams, certainly great programs, but if I were looking at it, I'd say they've been about what I expected. Arizona State at 3-3. It's about what I expected. Some thought it would be a disaster. Some thought they'd be really good. I think it's been really surprising. So it's going to be a fun game to watch in that I think this is a game that Arizona State has the personnel to match up pretty well to Stanford. Now, Stanford's well coached, and I could see them winning on the road as well. But this ought to be an interesting game for that reason. Now, is it overly interesting for you out there, if you're all only focused on who's still in the running for the major bowls and national rankings and potential playoff games? No, it's not. But I really enjoy all of these games, and I think that this is going to be a fun one to watch in that you're going to see, I think, some playmakers for Arizona State that obviously great receiver. They've got a chance to make some plays, and people have been able to run the football on Stanford. So I'm very curious to see how this game plays out. But I would, as I go along here, I'll mention a little bit of some thoughts of surprises. I would say Oregon is at 5-1, just a tad surprising in that they're not their record so much, but how they've played. They're a better team than I thought they would be coming into the season. Now, I do think we could see a change in that because they go to Pullman this week to play Washington State, and Washington State will do a really good job of challenging Oregon's pursuit, quickness on defense, as Oregon, I think, can run very, very well. But we'll see a challenge to Oregon's defense trying to match up points. And then I think this will be a fun game because I think there'll be a lot of points both ways. But this is going to be a tough spot for Oregon. I think that Washington State's defense is very underrated. They're very good. And that might be a little bit of a surprise. So maybe Oregon will come back to eventually where I thought they would be. But they, on tape, are a little bit better than I thought. Washington State's what I thought. I can tell you who's not played as well as I thought they would is Cal. I can tell you that Arizona has really been a disappointment. On tape, they've not played as well, and now Khalil Tate's out with an injury. It's been a disappointed that Chip Kelly's had this much trouble getting wins, but we're starting to see that change a little. I think Colorado's been, you know, maybe a little bit of a surprise to folks, but if you study them, they've been good. They've not beaten anybody, and now I think they might be on their way to, after being unbeaten, going on a two-loss skid. And USC's been about what I thought. And we're heading towards, as I thought at the beginning of the year, potentially having a two-loss team win the South. And this week's game, USC-Utah, likely is going to determine who's going to be the representative of the South. Now, Utah's been about what I expected. Some people, again, at pick Utah to win the South, and well, they're disappointing. Well, we don't know. I mean, they've got two losses, 4-2 overall, 2-2 in the conference. And if you thought they were going to win it, they lose this weekend, maybe a little bit disappointing. It's been Utah, typical Utah, very solid on defense, not a lot of playmakers, but they generate good pass rush. They tackle well. Offensively, they don't have a lot of playmakers, really good on special teams. USC's better, more talented. But will they go on the road and play well and play smart? Don't know. That's been the issue with USC. That's why the game, quite frankly, could go either way. Arizona, I mentioned them being a little bit disappointing. Maybe this is where UCLA and Chip Kelly get their second win as Arizona goes to UCLA. Colorado, Washington, as I mentioned and alluded to. I think Washington, very solid team, not real explosive, but I think they're better than Colorado, probably win this one. Talked a little about Oregon, Washington State. So that's kind of how I look at it if I were to assess the Pac-12 at this point. In the first wave of games on Saturday, number one is Michigan, Michigan State. And as I look at this game, and we've got the full breakdowns of all these games on LandryFootball.com. We just give you the Cliff Notes version here. I clearly see Michigan playing better on tape up front. I see the quarterback play in Patterson giving them an edge that they've not had before, a playmaking edge. But I still don't see, you know, dynamic playmaking offense. But I see a functionally moving offense that is more talented than Michigan State. It's going to be a challenge on the road in East Lansing. We know that D'Antonio is going to have his team ready to play. But I think this Michigan team's, to me, appears ready to take that step. Don't know. That's what we will watch and see. I can tell you as the tape, as I continue to absorb the tape, you know, Michigan right now is playing as complete a football as anybody in the Big Ten. A little bit better than Iowa. And if I were to tell you right now, who's the two most complete teams in the Big Ten playing the best ball, and you could kind of put, it would probably be Iowa and Michigan in the respective divisions. Might end up being the two teams that are playing in the Big Ten championship game. We'll see. Ohio State's banged up on defense, but they can outscore just about anybody. They're probably going to have to outscore Purdue today, this weekend, Saturday. Ohio State's not ready for a playoff run. They've got to get healthy on defense. They've got to defend the run better, or they're not going to have much of a chance. Their passing attack gives them a chance in pretty much every game in conference, and they find a way to camouflage some of those issues. They're well coached. They know what their weaknesses are. As a coaching staff, they know they don't tackle well on the back end. They know they can't generate any pass rush. They know they're doing a poor job with run fits. They know this. They're doing a pretty good job working around it, and they're doing it with their offense. So it's going to be a little bit of a race here to, at this stage, to get a little bit better for the Buckeyes on defense, and they might have to outscore people until they get to that point, if they get to that point, which would be playing Michigan at the end of the year. Purdue is the next step for Ohio State, and Purdue's played better. Talking about a turnaround, that's a turnaround of a team that's just played very well after starting out 0-3. In games that they could have won, a couple of those games, they found a way to get it done. I remember the game against Northwestern to open up the season on opening Thursday night. Could have had that one. A couple more, but they're playing better now. Might challenge them at home. Ohio State will likely have to outscore. Wisconsin bounces back, I think, against Illinois here. Illinois's not been awful, folks. I can tell you that the program's just not very good. Teams played a little bit better than they have in the past. The game that's going to really be worth paying attention to for you Big Ten fans that maybe you're only going to monitor one game at one time, it's up against the Michigan-Michigan State, so it's not going to get a lot of play, unfortunately. But Maryland-Iowa is going to be a lot of fun. This Iowa team is good. They're really good on the offensive line. We've talked all offseason coming into the year how good the tight ends were, Noah Fant. They block well in the run game. They're making plays in the passing game. Nathan Stanley is a really good quarterback that no one seems to talk about. We talk about him here. They're really good. Now, the loss to Iowa hurts them and may haunt them because even though they're playing better, they lose the bye to Wisconsin. You got it right now, folks. Maybe quietly, a four-way tie in the West of the Big Ten. Yes, Northwestern, Wisconsin, Iowa, and yes, Purdue. Now, that can change and likely will change quickly, but you can almost see it, can't you, coming down to Iowa, Wisconsin. Wisconsin already has that game. This Iowa team playing pretty good ball. Maryland, very inconsistent. Offensively, they've done a good job with the running game, as you might expect with Matt Canada and all of his eye candy pre-snap movements. It's been alternately successful in games. I'm very curious to see what they're able to do against this very disciplined Iowa defensive front. Going to be fun to watch. Maryland goes to a bowl game. It'll be interesting to see what happens with Matt Canada. Now, I've been asked a lot about the Maryland coaching situation and where they go here. I don't know, because we're still waiting on the results of the investigation of the death of Jordan McNair. And I understand that the results are going to come out as early as tomorrow, Friday, or they're going to come out to the board, and then the board will study it, and we may know by the end of next week what's going to happen there. That will determine, you know, where they go from there and what it sounds like. I still don't see DJ Durkin being involved in coming back, but I do think that the results will have something to do, the results of that finding and the results of Maryland being able to go to a bowl game or not will ultimately determine whether Matt Canada would have a job. Listen, there's no indication that Matt was aware of any of these situations. But if he was around for any of it and it comes out really bad, it's going to be a bad look. And the likelihood is that they're going to clean house. However, if they finish strong, go to a bowl game, and it looks like the direction is really good and there's nothing that they can really tie to Matt Canada, and there's a strong belief inside, because remember, it's the players who were talking bad about the program. If they support Matt Canada and he's winning and goes to a bowl game, remember, Matt Canada was one of those hot up-and-coming head coaching candidates that may indeed keep his job. So we'll keep you posted on where that is headed. Northwestern goes to Rutgers, and Rutgers is a bad-looking football team. Watch Tulsa going to Arkansas. Arkansas gets a win here, don't they? Should. Phillip Montgomery's team has not played all that well. Hung in versus Texas in week two. Luke Fickell's going to Temple, doing a good job at Cincinnati. North Carolina, Syracuse. Dino Babers just got to get this one done. Virginia, hot Virginia going up against Duke. It's not basketball season yet. Good football game. Oh, finishing up some Big Ten talk. Nebraska maybe at home gets their win against Minnesota. Minnesota played well against Ohio State until the overwhelming talent advantage started to take into effect. Nebraska's got to find a way to win. Listen, we can talk all we want about how bad the program was. Let me tell you what the tape says very clearly. Nebraska just plays dumb football. And I question their mental toughness. I question their discipline on the field. You don't blow a 10-point lead as late as they did if you're doing a good job of coaching. It's not an indictment of what Scott Frost can be for Nebraska. But anybody that wants to continue to make excuses for, oh, this is not on Scott. This they can't win a game, and it's you know, poor Scott. No. This is not doing a very good job coaching. So while the players that are there and that are going to stay need to learn how to do things better, Scott Frost needs to do a better job as well. Nebraska is definitely a disappointment at this stage, not winning a single game. That's embarrassing. Penn State to Indiana, Tom Allen's got the team playing really well, but they're not there, and Penn State's going to rebound. Played poorly last week. They'll play well this week. In the Big Ten, if you're talking about disappointments, you'd have to talk Nebraska. In the early part of the season, you have to talk about Purdue. They've turned things around. Wisconsin, listen, I guess it depends upon your perspective. Wisconsin losing to BYU is surprising. I expected them to lose. I mean, I expect Michigan to beat Wisconsin. So I don't think at 4-2, 2-1, it's a big disappointment. But for the folks that picked Wisconsin to go to the national playoffs, well, they would consider it disappointing. Well, that's just an overrating of them. I would say that the level of how bad Rutgers is a disappointment. I would say Penn State, no crime in losing to Ohio State, but having them at home with Ohio State having their issues, little bit disappointing. Michigan State, disappointing in how they played in the early part of the year, but they're getting better. Maybe a surprise would be Michigan, particularly if they can finish it out. Iowa. If I told you right now Iowa's the best team in the West in the Big Ten, there's no doubt in my mind that they are. Now, whether that is going to be the case going forward, don't know. In the ACC, I mentioned North Carolina going to Syracuse, Virginia, Duke. In the second window, got North Carolina State and Clemson. North Carolina State's got big receivers. Ryan Finley can throw it around. This NC State team's a good team, but the 5-0 record is a byproduct just as much as the record. It is Colorado-like. Clemson only gets tested here if Clemson does some sleepwalking in this game. And I just don't see that happening. At home in Clemson, don't see that happening. I think Clemson's a bit on a mission. I don't think they get derailed here. Not a great week in the ACC. It's not a great week in the conference overall. Clemson is the only team that really impresses. NC State's done a good job. Boston College is well coached, and without A.J. Dillon, they're right there. Syracuse is up and down, 1-2 in the league. No doubt the biggest disappointment in the ACC and in the country is Florida State. Wake Forest has been a little disappointing. They've been a little worse than I thought. I can tell you who's been awful is Louisville. They're awful. Maybe not the most disappointing, but they're just simply awful. Virginia Tech, certainly losing to Old Dominion is one of the more disappointing things that I've seen. Virginia, a little bit of a surprise. Miami, certainly disappointing in how they've looked. Duke, surprising. North Carolina's been bad. Georgia Tech, not a very good look right now. Paul Johnson, certainly feeling a lot of heat. North Carolina, feeling a lot of heat. Bob Petrino, feeling a lot of heat. Big 12. Oklahoma, TCU, certainly lost a lot of luster this week for this week's game. Thought this game would be a big game. TCU's been a little disappointing. It's been a tough year. It's been a tough year for TCU. And it's been tough for Gary Patterson, who's lost both his mom and his dad, his mother and his father, recently. So it's been a tough year for him. At 3-3, I expect Oklahoma to rebound. This Oklahoma team's kind of getting written off after the tough loss against Texas, but they're still explosive. They're still very much a player in the Big 12. I mean, right now, it looks like Oklahoma. It looks like Texas. West Virginia, he's got some major problems on offense they need to figure out. And no one else in that conference really has much of a shot. I know that Texas Tech is 2-1. West Virginia is 3-1. But I don't see anybody else being a player. Big 12 is going to be fun down the stretch. I would definitely say that TCU's been a disappointment. Oklahoma State's been a disappointment. Kansas State's been a little bit of a disappointment. Iowa State's done about what I thought. I think Texas Tech has been the surprise. I think they have beating TCU last week. If they can finish off decently, go to a bowl game, that's a surprise. I've been tough on Cliff Kingsbury. I'm not sure that it's a great fit for him and his background there, but I don't think they do a very good job there coaching on a year-in, year-out basis. But they've done a good job this year. Give them credit. Want to give them credit. Speaking of them, they host Kansas this week. Got to take care of business. Can't blow a game like that. Who have I left off? Done the ACC. Done the Big 12. Done the Big 10. Done the Pac-12. How about the SEC? What's happened thus far this year? No doubt that the disappointment has been Auburn. The surprise, maybe a little bit of a surprise for some with Kentucky, Florida. Certainly LSU. I think a lot of people had written off to LSU, but there's some talent there. They've done a really good job. Couple of games to look out for, a few games to look out for in the SEC. Auburn Ole Miss in the early window, going to be big. It's big. Ole Miss could go to 6-2. Auburn trying to avoid disaster. Auburn trying to avoid the wheels from completely coming off. Alabama goes to Tennessee. Tennessee with a nice win last week. Alabama, game control, explosive plays. Don't really see Tennessee doesn't match up well at all at the line of scrimmage. I don't know that anybody right now could beat Alabama. Tennessee, even keeping it respectable for a half would be a challenge. Mississippi State, LSU, big game. Now, it was a little different environment. LSU, all the pats on the back. Everyone's excited. You know, the same folks that thought that they couldn't get things done this year, all of a sudden now thinking, we can beat Alabama in Tiger Stadium. There's this magic and whatnot. You wonder how LSU responds this week. I'm very curious to see how they respond both strategically and emotionally against Mississippi State. LSU rushed the field against Georgia in the win last week. Really? Okay. Nice win. Really nice win. Always thought you'd like to be the program that people rush the field when they beat you, not when you rush the field. But nice win by LSU. Taking care of Mississippi State at home is a must. It's an absolute must. You're better than Mississippi State. You're at home. Should win the game. Defending Nick Starkle, the option game is going to be the key. It's going to be a different look in what you're trying to defend against Georgia. Mississippi State's defensive front, It's a good defensive front. It's better than Georgia's. So can LSU run the football as well? If they can't, can Joe Burrow make enough plays? All those things get answered. I think they get answered in LSU's favor, but we shall see. The Alabama game is really not the focus in my mind. I know it is for everyone else. I think taking care of business against Mississippi State, taking care of business against A&M on the road at the end of the year, and giving your best shot against Alabama, and making sure that you don't do anything foolish like losing to Arkansas or Rice, those things are the priority for LSU at this point to finish the season. Vanderbilt, Kentucky. Like Kentucky at home. I like them at the line of scrimmage. Listen, I think it's not that playing on the road at Vanderbilt's any real chore, but playing at home at Kentucky, there's still a lot of positive vibes on what can happen. This is a 5-1 team. Kentucky could go 4-1 in the conference, 6-1. Get ready for the stretch run. Got to beat Vandy. Got to beat Missouri. Got to beat Tennessee if you're Kentucky. The Georgia game will come, and you will get your shot. But this is a game you should win. Kentucky's the better team. See if they can take care of business. So, as I'm looking at it this week, folks, I think every week's going to come down to some intrigue as everyone begins to score watch and see where and rankings watch and anticipate. We're going to see, in my mind, some really good matchups. I think the upsets are not done. Clearly, Alabama, Ohio State, Clemson, Notre Dame all control their fate. They win in. They win in. And they will get in. But we know that history tells us that's not going to happen. And I think there are some teams that are vulnerable. We talked a little bit about Ohio State. Notre Dame has got not many tough challenges. But, you know, I think Alabama and Notre Dame are more likely to run the table, but mainly because of Notre Dame's schedule and because Alabama's dominance over the most difficult slate left. So maybe it's the 2 and 3 slot right now, Ohio State and Clemson, that will be the most vulnerable. We shall see. Don't know. And who makes a statement? Who's a little better? You like Michigan better than LSU? Texas better than LSU? Texas better than Michigan? Michigan better than Texas? Oklahoma better than all of them? What about Florida? Florida's sitting there with one loss. How about Florida maybe taking care of business, beating Georgia next week? We'll get into that next week. They've beaten LSU. Florida beats Georgia. Florida needs to be jumped up in that conversation. Neutral site, beat Georgia, beat LSU. Definitely Florida goes ahead of LSU. Michigan, if they take care of business against Michigan State, we know that's going to come down to Michigan, Ohio State, if Michigan can win out. A lot of football, a lot of intrigue left. That's what is so much fun about college football. So we're going to get into some questions here and get into some NFL. We've got some, going to keep you updated on some of the coaching conversation and whatnot, and what's going on around that end of things, is we're going to have some movement as we do every year. Before we get to some questions, I want to tell you about, I don't know about you guys, but I think for the most part, my experience is guys are terrible at taking care of their health. Whether it's that knee injury, bad back, something even worse. Guys are usually more comfortable just ignoring it, it'll go away, rubbing some dirt on it, than seeing a doctor. I'm guilty of it. I'm sure you are. The same is true for erectile dysfunction. Studies show 70% of guys who experience ED don't get treated for it. Thankfully, Roman created an easy way to get checked out by a doctor and get treated for ED online. Roman is a one-stop shop where licensed U.S. physicians can diagnose ED and ship medication right to your door. With Roman, there are no waiting rooms, no awkward face-to-face conversations or uncomfortable trips to the pharmacy. You can handle everything discreetly online. All you have to do is visit GetRoman.com/Landry, L-A-N-D-R-Y. Fill out a brief medical onboarding, chat with a doctor, and get an FDA-approved ED meds delivered to your door in discreet, unmarked packaging. Guys, go online and get checked by the doctor. Don't have to worry about getting embarrassed, but take care of yourself. Erectile dysfunction is a problem that guys don't tackle. But with Roman, it's really easy. So take care of it. For a free visit online, go to Roman.com/Landry. That's GetRoman.com/Landry for a free online visit. GetRoman.com/Landry. All right, I want to get into some questions before we get into some NFL discussions of the week. Kevin asks, Georgia versus LSU, did you have an issue with Georgia's fake field goal decision in the first quarter? I did. I think in that situation, it's such a low percentage play. If you feel confident in your team, and it's pretty early, get the 3 points. LSU got three. Get the three. Kind of quiet down a little bit. I thought what it did, it just gave LSU a little spark of momentum that you didn't need to do that early. Didn't like it. Wouldn't have liked it if they converted it. Just didn't like the call there. He also asked, commensurate with the talent level, is the Dallas defensive front seven the best coached in the NFL? Oh, I wouldn't say that. I think they're good. I think Rod Marinelli does a good job. But there's some talent there. But I don't think they're necessarily the best coach. But they certainly are well coached, I would say that. Also, I asked, how much of an issue is a lack of player leadership with the Bucs? I think it is a part of the problem. And he asked, he says, because in Sunday's game against the Falcons, two of the better defensive players were doing silly sideline dances because of a three and out, but the team was still losing. Well, I think a lot of times, guys, don't do a very good job of handling things. I don't necessarily think that means a lack of discipline, but it's not a good look. I think there's a number of problems in Tampa. I don't think there's great talent on defense. I think it's a little bit of fool's gold. I think a lot of people there kind of sell that as a team that can make a run at the playoffs. They're getting better. They really are not a playoff roster, and they're really not that close to a playoff roster. I mean, defensively, they're not a playoff caliber team. And then unlike Atlanta or New Orleans, who also have problems on defense, those two teams have elite quarterbacks and the Bucs don't have that. So the Bucs don't really have anything that's outstanding. You know, the Falcons have an outstanding offense, has ton of weapons in the passing game. The Saints have a Hall of Fame quarterback. Carolina's been a solid team, a physical team, pretty good on defense, and a quarterback that can make plays with his feet and occasionally be outstanding. Tampa doesn't have a really good defense. They got a quarterback that's very inconsistent, very undisciplined. They make a lot of mistakes. There's just nothing special about the Bucs. I know they won their first couple of games, and one of the first things I said is that's going to fizzle out very quickly, and it has. I think they'll win some games, but I don't see them anything more than a 500 team, if that. Will asks, first of all, he says some nice words. He enjoys the podcast and the film room study on the website. We appreciate that. Will went to college at South Carolina. Got my MBA at UGA. So, oh, wow. You've got Tide winning both. He wants to know a little bit more. I'd love to learn more about the time when Saban and Muschamp were together, as well as Kirby, regarding the defensive scheme and how they all evolved. Wondering if Saban tried to get Muschamp as defensive coordinator when he went to Bama, as Muschamp left Auburn and went to Texas that same offseason. No, first of all, Saban, Muschamp, and Kirby were together at LSU. I actually recommended Kirby to Nick as a young GA, and Muschamp was a guy that was coming up. They both played at Georgia's. You well know that, obviously. It's why you're writing that. But I've known both of them since their time at LSU, and Kirby was the younger of the two. They're a little bit different. The difference was Saban liked both of them, but Kirby was a little bit more they're a little bit different personality-wise. Kirby was a little bit more he was quicker to learn, and he was a little bit more even-keeled and a little bit more organized than Will. And if I can remember when talking with Nick at the time when he was looking, when he went to Bama, he wanted – Kirby was a guy that he wanted. And it was really a personality fit that could get that. Whereas Muschamp was maybe a little bit more of a challenge to deal with, not from a discipline standpoint, but just from a – Kirby could retain thing, was a little bit more calm. Will's a little bit more of you got to calm him down to get things to go through. Both good coaches, though. Will, of course, had the opportunity in Texas, did a really good job there. I thought he created some toughness in the Texas program that didn't exist under Mack. And I thought when Will left Texas that it was a big problem. I mean, that was a problem. Pardon me. When Will left Texas, I thought it began a slide from a toughness standpoint. You say, I'd like to hear any of my thoughts about the influence that Saban had on Muschamp for their time together. Well, all the guys that have worked for Nick have been heavily influenced by his style. Organizationally, scheme, if you look at all three, they all coached the secondary. And Kirby and Muschamp, absolutely, on how they teach play in the secondary, how to teach defensive backs to stay in phase of a receiver's route, how to teach press coverage, how to pattern match, how to communicate, you know, like against bunch sets, all of that very, very heavily influenced. Now, running a program, I think it has a lot to do as well. Kirby is running the same program at Georgia as Nick is running at Alabama. The same type. I mean, the same look. Now, at South Carolina, Will's not doing the exact same thing because he can't. They don't have the money at South Carolina and don't have the resources that Georgia has. He doesn't have nearly the staff that Muschamp has. But the style and the beliefs are, I think, every bit as strong. I know that you ask about any stories. I do remember that Saban took Muschamp to the Dolphins with him. You know, that was a different experience, which I thought helped Will a lot. In fact, I know it did. In terms of coaching that type of player, but coaching in the NFL is a lot more challenging from a pure X's and O's and a strategic standpoint because you are matching strategy against opponents that are close in personnel, much closer in personnel than you are in college. The talent differential between the top teams in the NFL is a lot smaller than it is in college football. So I thought it really helped him out a lot. So I hope that answers some of your questions, Will, about Will and Kirby. Jacob asks, do you think the Monday night game was a sign that the Niners' offense is getting healthy and improving, or the Packers' defense didn't play well? Well, the Niners had a really good game plan. Thought they did a really good job getting Beathard ready to play, and I thought they did a good job. Is it a sign that they're going to get a lot better? I don't know. I think that there's limitations there, quite frankly. There's a reason why Garoppolo is the starter and Beathard's the backup. I think this is going to be great for CJ. He's going to get his opportunity, and I think he's going to only get better. But I don't know that I'd say that. I do think they are getting some pieces back healthy, and I do think they'll do a better job than we've seen the past couple of weeks. But they outplayed the Packers. And if it wasn't for Aaron Rodgers, they would have won that game. Getting better, the Packers' defense has been very inconsistent, did not play well at all. So I think it's a combination of both. I wouldn't get overly optimistic, but yeah, I think they can get better. I don't think they're going to win many games, but I think you'll see a little better performance. Jacob asks, not to be a prisoner of the moment, but is Patrick Mahomes the most physically gifted quarterback you've seen enter the NFL? I don't know about that. I think it is. Here's what I would say. He's right up there because in today's game, today's athlete, we're seeing bigger, stronger, more nimble athletes than we ever had before. Is he a little bit more athletic than Aaron Rodgers? Yeah, certainly was coming out, but that's what Aaron Rodgers does, and Aaron Rodgers does it with precision and vision and poise, but Aaron Rodgers contorts his body and plays with an injury and throws on one foot and throws falling back with an unbelievable arm and throws it across his body and throws it accurately. You know, he does things. Brett Favre did it. Gosh, Greg Cook did it back in the late 60s. They've been some, but it's more and more prevalent today that you're seeing the better athlete. So I would say that Mahomes is definitely in that upper tier of guys that have come into the league. But I will say you're going to see more and more of that because that is the modern-day athlete playing quarterback, bigger, stronger. And to me, it's just about harnessing those skills. What I think, the physical skills of Patrick Mahomes allows him to do certain things. But what's going to make him great if he's great is his vision. His vision is very underrated. I think people talk too much about what he does and his arm strength and all that, and they don't talk enough about his vision. Because, see, that's what's going to make him great or not. That's what makes Aaron Rodgers great. Yes, he's got the physical skills to make those throws, but he's got the vision. You can have the great vision. I mean, you can have the great physical skills. If you don't have the vision, you're just throwing it to the other jersey. Kid's got special qualities, and he's coached by a special quarterback teacher. Kelly asks, he's been a follower for years. Thanks so much. Really appreciate that. Question revolves around the two-minute offense. Not the two-minute offense, but less than the minute offense. Or there's some tried and true do's and don'ts. In both college and the NFL, I see decent gain. And at the quarterbacks, and the quarterbacks waste time trying to get an additional playoff rather than clocking the ball. Seeing these guys get the time and downs out of whack. Enlighten us all, please. Man, it's frustrating to watch. I get it. I hope, Kelly, you got a chance to watch the aforementioned Aaron Rodgers on Monday Night Football. That's about as good as you can get. He's running the whole offense from the sideline. I mean, Mike McCarthy's looking at him with 6 seconds. What are you doing? And he said, relax. I'm going to make one more shot and give us 3 seconds so that when we kick, there's no time left on the clock. I got this. That's the precise, perfect way to handle the clock. Not everybody can do that, obviously. Here's what it really comes down to. In running that two-minute, and we still call it two-minute offense, but I get your point. It's 58 seconds, it's 42 seconds, and you got to go 40 yards, 60 yards. You got to get a field goal. How you do it? You got to call plays at the line of scrimmage. Everything is done in choreographed. So it's not like, well, what do we do now? You already know what to do. You've practiced it. It is done. There is a specific day where you work on that offensively and defensively. How do you get off the field on defense? How do you stay on the field on offense? So the situation dictates what you want to do on clocking the ball on the time clock. First of all, how much time do you have? In college, remember, and this is why it's different. In college, you pick up a first down, the clock stops, not in the NFL. So all of it depends upon the exact situation. But the way you want to go with it is how much time do you have left, okay? And what down is it? Because you want to be careful. Oftentimes you're looking at it, you're working at it, and you go through this in this scenario because let's just create a scenario. You got a situation where you don't have any timeouts left. You need to clock the ball or run a play. Well, how much time is left? How many downs left do you have? How many yards do you need to pick up and a chance to get out of bounds to still create the opportunity to maybe get a field goal shot, let's say? Well, sometimes you have to be careful. You might want to say, yeah, well, clock it, clock it, clock it. Well, keep in mind, too, that when you clock it, you give the defense a chance to reset. It's all situational, Kelly. So, yes, you sometimes, you're wasting time, or so it appears, and it is, because you're trying to get there. And when you're wasting time, as you say, that's when you got to clock it. But oftentimes, that's why you're hurrying your guys up, because you want to get them up to the line of scrimmage. You get a defense out of position that maybe reduces or eliminates the pass rush. It allows you to get a guy out on a route a little deeper, and all of a sudden you got a play, and boom, that's the key. So the real key to practice this is your offensively, okay, we'll take it to what you asked. Your offense, your lineman, everybody has to get off the ground and running to the line of scrimmage and be at the ready, okay? And then it's up to the officials to make sure the defense does the same. The defense can't substitute. You're not substituting. Boom. You're ready to go. That's what you want to do. If you can't do that, if you're struggling to do that, and too much time is running, then you need to clock it. But you still need to get to the line to clock it. So if you can get to the line in a hurry and get the snap to clock it, you can get to the line in a hurry, have a pre-designed play in a situation, and really get the defense on its heels before they have time to set up. So really good points you bring up. Yes, there are plenty of times I, too, look and say frustrated because it's poor management. But sometimes it's poor management because you don't know if it's poor training. You don't know what they practice, how well they practice it. And, you know, but a lot of times the situation dictates getting there, running the snap, and running the play. But really, really good questions. Thank you for getting into that situation. Okay, Richard asks, what's your assessment on Louis Riddick as a player, as a Scott? I remember Louis when he came out of Pitt. pretty good player. Played in the league a little while. Pretty you know, solid player. You mentioned what was his assessment as a scout. Well, Lewis really wasn't a scout. Lewis worked in player programs and actually did some player personnel work, which he was never really involved in running front office, making decisions along those lines. He was never saw him out on the road as a scout. See him at some of the All-Star games and whatnot prior to it, but just really never worked with him and really never saw him because, again, he wasn't really a scout. But he did some things in personnel. He didn't, you know, for whatever it's worth, he didn't last long in the pro personnel side of it. I know that when he was let go there, that was, you know, they're different philosophies, just like coaching changes. And it wasn't, the comment was evaluating wasn't his strong suit. So that's why I know that he spent a couple of teams, but can't tell you, didn't see him firsthand. And again, since he didn't make any decisions in the places he was at, it's really hard to evaluate him. Richard always asks, mention about play calling on your Tuesday's podcast in the Super Bowl between the Seahawks and the Patriots on the goal line on second goal and one at the 1 yard line instead of running it to the Seahawks op, throw the football in that situation. Was that the correct call or poor execution? Here's the thing, Richard, on play calls like that. In crucial situations, I think players, not plays. And certainly would have run the football there. Now, there was a rook. There was definitely a pass look. I mean, there was definitely, they were overplaying the run. But I think in that situation, I felt going in that you got to run Lynch there. And that was my thought going into the play. I hate seeing it after the play because it is so, so much second guess. That I don't like doing it, but clearly, you know, I thought the play. Now, the play design was fine. I mean, they went the right place with the ball. It was just undercut by Malcolm Butler. Got to give credit to the defense there. So it was well defended, no doubt. All right, let's get into some NFL. We've gone a little bit long here. Denver, Arizona tonight. Very curious to see if the Cardinals can run the football on the Broncos. Broncos really struggling defensively. And, you know, I've said this. Just spent a little time in the past doing some work on Denver radio, and one of the things I said at the time a while back, and one of the things about when you have background in coaching and scouting, you see things before they manifest into a problem, you can see it. And I was critiqued that the Broncos, from a personnel standpoint, under John Elway, not really done a very good job. And of course, you know, in Denver, John Elway is deified, and the media, the talk show hosts, and the beat writers there, it's always an excuse, you know, why it's somebody else's fault, and it's never John Elway's. And, you know, other than recruit Peyton Manning to Denver, John Elway hadn't done a whole lot there. People who know what goes on in the Broncos organization knows that the Adam Peters and the late Tom Hecker Jr., Jack Del Rio, John Fox, those are the guys that had the Derek Wolfs and the Von Miller picks. Those were the guys that were carrying the weight there, making those decisions and picks, which John got credit for, which is fine. Okay, but when those guys leave, whether they leave on their own, you fire them, what have you, see, my thing is, when you're a head coach, you've got to coach the coaches. When you're a GM, in my view of a GM in the NFL, you've got to be able to train your personnel department how to evaluate. And you know, I was criticized for saying that John Elway is not a football guy. Well, let me explain what a football guy is. A football guy is a guy with a coaching and scouting background, a deep-rooted football and scouting background. If you don't do that, that's what I consider a football guy. John Elway is one of the greatest players ever. I played, too. We all played. Playing doesn't make you an evaluator of talent, okay? It's certainly, I think, an important part to getting an entry into scouting and learning the position from the bottom up. And the ones that who have played, which a lot of us have, that have learned the game, coaching and scouting and work your way up, those are the best GMs. Now, you're seeing a lot of GMs in the league that are not from a football background. And it's fine. I'm not, you know, sensitive to that. But what I'm saying is, who's going to teach the personnel director and the scouts how to evaluate if you yourself have not evaluated, you've never done it? So therein lies the problem. So where is Denver now? Well, the defense is not as good as it has been. They're having to kind of pick guys in free agency because they can't draft well. The one position that you would think John Elway could evaluate well was quarterbacks. Well, he hadn't done that very well. Paxton Lynch was a disaster. Case Keenum hadn't worked. Brock Osweiler was another one of his genius finds. So he can't figure it out. And Adam Peters left to go to San Francisco. Now he's helping out John Lynch. John Lynch is another guy. Never coached, never scouted. Again, it's not that those people can't be successful. John can be successful, Lynch and Elway. But it's going to depend upon who he hires. You follow me? I mean, those are the people under him are going to be the ones that truly make the decisions and do the work. And if those people are not as good, he's going to fail. Whereas if you take a guy like Bill Belichick that's a great football guy, it doesn't matter. You think Scott Pioli was the reason for the success in New England? Of course not. Scott just did what Belichick told him. Now Nick Cesario's the genius. And it's coaches and personnel people, every one of those guys are successful because Belichick makes them successful. He teaches them because he knows how to do it. And the top GMs can do that. They can scout the scouts and teach the scouts. And that's part of the problem. Anyway, you don't want to get off on it, but this is a game Denver's got to win. They are not playing well. They're falling out of the race quickly. And somebody's getting heat. And, of course, it's going to be the head coach because it's not John Elway's fault. Now, who's hiring the coaches? John Elway. Well, how do you know how to hire a coach? Well, you don't. If you've not coached and you don't know how to evaluate coaches, you've never done it, how do you expect somebody to be good at it? But, anyway, he's a Hall of Famer and he can kiss babies and sign autographs. That's what you got in Denver. Tennessee goes to the Chargers in the early morning, our time, London game. Can the Titans pass protect? Hey, the Chargers have lost to the Chiefs and the Rams, beating everybody else. It's a good-looking team nobody's talking about. Get Joey Bosa back in the Chargers, and we got something to talk about. How about the Bears? Can the Bears find a way to get off the mat defensively? Couldn't do anything against the aforementioned Brock Osweiler and the Dolphins. Can they get something done defensively at home against New England? Quite the challenge. Bears need to step up. That division race in the NFC North is for the taking. Are they good enough to be a challenger in it? We'll see. Games like last week were missed opportunities. This week gives you a litmus test. The Colts and the Bills, two teams struggling. See who comes out there. Miami-Detroit, two teams trying to stay in it or get in it in Detroit's case. Detroit on the road. We'll see if they can run the football. We'll see if Miami can Brock Osweiler do it 2 weeks in a row. He's going to be starting against Tannehill is still out. The Jets host Minnesota. Sam Darnold, that running game, playing good ball. We'll see if they can get it done against Minnesota. Can Minnesota find themselves a little bit? Speaking of finding yourself, can the Eagles find themselves at home against Carolina? Folks, it's not too late week 7 to start looking at saying you're digging yourself a hole if you're the Minnesotas and the Phillies of the world. Carolina's been in every game pretty much this year. Cleveland, Tampa, who can score points in this game? Cleveland's been pretty consistent on defense. Can they go on the road, find some points on offense? Be interesting to see. Jacksonville, speaking of finding offense, can they find any? Man, what an awful performance last week. Houston, play on the offensive line, still is a problem, but they won 3 straight games. Saints, Baltimore, playing good defensively. Can the Saints go on the road, get some points here? Can they pass protect? Offensive line's been playing pretty good. Drew Brees gets the ball out quickly. Going to be a good challenge here for the Saints. San Francisco hosting the Rams. We'll just talk a little bit about the Niners. Yeah, they're getting better, but, boy, the Rams are playing at a whole different level. Defensively, they're not a great team, but offensively, they're really good. Dallas, Washington, old rival game here. Both teams playing pretty well. Dallas with the win last week. Good to see that for them. And then Washington, 3-2, hanging in there. Cincinnati, Kansas City on Sunday night. See with this Cincinnati team, they really struggled against Pittsburgh last week. But this Cincinnati team, for stretches, plays really well. Curious to see if Kansas City gets back on track. And then you got the Giants in Atlanta on Monday night. Falcons trying to find some defense, and Giants just trying to find something offensively. Find a way to get a win. Green Bay, Oakland, Pittsburgh, Seattle, all on bye weeks this week. So we will be here on Tuesday to break down the weekend that was in football. Reminder to check us out at LandryFootball.com for all the film room breakdowns of all these NFL games, all these college games, all the latest news and notes from the draft scene, recruiting, you name it. And if you got any questions, send it to us at LandryFootball.com, and I'll be sure to address it here on a future podcast. But we'll get to it on Tuesday if you think of one you want me to address. Appreciate you joining us. Thank you for being with us. Have a great weekend. And join us on the next edition of the Landry Football Podcast on LandryFootball.com.
To get more of Chris's knowledge, visit and subscribe to LandryFootball.com. You can also find him on Twitter at LandryFootball. This has been Landry Football on Radio Influence.
This is a We've Seen That Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
I have seen this movie in part or in whole 50 times, The Shawshank Redemption, in the last 23 years. I remember seeing this movie not only in the theater, but I remember buying the videotape. I mean, the videotape, Jay Betzel, of this movie back in the 90s. I had that for my VCR, eventually got the DVD back in like the late 90s, but I had VHS of this movie.
It's one of those two. Remember back in the VHS days, too, you know, it's kind of take up a little space on the counter and all that. It's kind of one of those, to buy a VHS, it had to be one of those, you know, you're going to watch over and over again. And that definitely fits this one. And I think what you're referring to is that I was telling you the other day, we were talking about Stephen King kind of being in the news lately with It being such a huge hit. I believe the all-time biggest September movie in the history of movies, you know, in the box office. And the fact that The Shawshank Redemption is actually based on a novella that Stephen King wrote for the book Different Seasons, and it was called Rita Hayworth and the Shawshank Redemption.
And I never knew that. In all these times that I've watched the movie, I never really did any kind of research into who wrote the story that this movie came out of, this fictionalized story that it came out of. I mean, I was curious, I think, at one point, Jay, whether it was somehow based, at least loosely, on some kind of a true story on somebody. Because there's a lot of, I mean, you can believe a lot of what's in this movie in terms of prison life back in the 40s, 50s, 60s, and how someone could potentially escape, etc. But I never really looked into it. And until the famous Jay Betzel, told me, Stephen King wrote the series of books, I guess, that this kind of morphed into, or part of this book. I guess it was like a short story that got converted into the movie, right?
And it also had the short story called The Body, which was turned into the movie Stand By Me, starring River Phoenix, directed by Rob Reiner. Big, big hit back in the day.
Wow.
That was a short story that was in this same book. I believe there was four stories.
We've Seen That with TJ Reeves and Jay Betzel can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.